Forgiveness. That's okay, that's it. Got it.
And everybody needs to mute.
Yeah, please. Right. Ooh.
Come here, little mute. Okay. I am going to read this mostly just because so I can keep my emotions at bay. But my sister, Kathy, died on February 17th of this year. She was 74. And this is a story of three sisters and the effects COPD had on our family. I'm the oldest. Kathy was born 3 years later, and Jody, 11 months younger, Irish twins, as they say. Kathy and Jody were very close. I was always somewhat the outsider. They were very creative, and I was in my own way. They bonded together with their love of life, friends, and clothes. They built a successful clothing line, Jewel Tofier. They had a thriving wholesale business and three stores in the Panhandle of Florida, showcasing their line. They both smoked. Kathy was brilliant, but lived with lots of stress. She was a perfectionist, and I think smoking was her Achilles heel. Jody smokes to this day and has never had a problem. Kathy tried and tried to quit. I went with her to many anti-smoking event, only to find out within 3 weeks she was smoking again. So it was a lifetime battle for her. They were so talented, and they brought their individual expertise into this business. Kathy held the purse strings and her sense of style, and Jody was the designer and the buyer for the store. Looking at the world in such different ways, working together, was a tough assignment for them. Smoking was the common vice that held them together. Whoops. My page is different. That's worth stopping on. Smoking was the common vice that held them together. Anyway, with such a close relationship, they worked through the conflicts and they loved each other a lot. When I visited, we had great times until about day 5. Kathy was soft and solid. Jody and I are emotional. Within about 5 days, Jody and I were disagreeing very loudly about everything, and Kathy tried in her quiet way to bring us into civil conversations. I think this really took a toll on Kathy. So, COVID caught up with Kathy 4 years ago. 3 years ago, she brought in Comfort Care Hospice in Florida. She was put on oxygen and for the rest of her life, and she chose never to leave home again. Everyone on her hospice team fell in love with Kathy, sweet Kathy, and they gave her the best care ever. Jody, who lived next door, became her major caregiver. It was not the best for either of them. Jody often announced, "I am not a natural caregiver. I'm a designer." So after the COVID lockdown, I would express my desire to come down. Kathy would say, "No, I don't want you to come here, Karen. It's just too crazy in Florida, and I don't want you on airplanes yet. I'm okay. I just have a hard time breathing, but I'm handling it. We've had a great life that we shared together. So many good times. The memories we've created are still, and it is still creating by phone and mail. They don't go away, Karen. They'll follow us wherever we may go." February 1st, Kathy called. "Karen, I need you." The next day I was on an airplane and I was on an airplane the next morning. When I arrived, she said, "I need a break from Jody. I want us to be alone, you and me." Her bedroom had been moved into the kitchen because she was in bed most of the time. But the day after I arrived, we did sister time. We slept together. And after my arrival, she got up. Everything changed. We cooked together. We talked. She talked to me, taught me how to take care of her meds. She sat at her computer working on Joel Tauvier financials, which she still was dealing with to that day, with her little dog, Bella, at her side. We talked and talked and talked as long as she had the breath for it. Then on Sunday, January the 13th, together we made my mother's eggs Benedict. And oh boy, did we enjoy that. We cleaned our plates. Monday morning, Kathy asked for breakfast. I fixed it, and she couldn't eat it. From then on, she was on liquids and kept herself hydrated. I was scheduled to leave on the 17th, and I told her I didn't want to go yet and that I would be staying a few days more. We spent quiet time on that. After that, she said, I think I'm going to go to bed early tonight. That was on Wednesday evening, the 16th. Okay, I said, that's fine, but I'm going to go into the living room and stay up for a little bit longer. Kathy continued to talk. I said, Kath, I really can't quite understand what you're saying. Then I realized she was talking, but not to me. When I came to bed, she put a king-size pillow between the middle of the bed, crossways, so that it was between the way we were sleeping. And she put her head on the edge of the pillow and placed it so that I would be facing her on the same pillow when I came to bed. I gave her a kiss, lay my head on the pillow, and went to sleep. I woke up suddenly at 3:02 in the morning. Kathy wasn't there. I looked over. She was lying on her back with lovely pillows being propped up around her head. She was beautiful, so serene. For around the clock, for the last 3 years, she had the nasal cannula that she had worn day and night for 3 years. Well, when I pulled the covers back a bit, her face was so serene. She showed soft signs of peace. I leaned over. There was no breath. For pulling back the covers, the cannula, she held it in her hand, almost like a rosary. I kissed her and we had our last hug. Kathy had no fear of death. She had been preparing for this day for a very long time. She gave me a gift that morning, inviting me to be with her in those most intimate moments. She is at peace. Kathy's hospice nurse, Stephanie, called me and she said, Karen, Kathy waited for you. She knew. Wait a minute. She knew that you would be with her in the way she wanted and needed to be comforted as she died. And with that comfort, Kathy lives within me today and forevermore. Thank you all for being trusted friends.
Thank you, Karen, for sharing such an intimate story with us. And some of us may have gone through something similar. I don't know, but I'm sure we've all lost people.
Yeah. And I knew this was the place I wanted to come and speak it out loud.
I'm glad you felt so comfortable and welcomed, et cetera.
Yes. Anybody have any questions?
Susan.
Yeah, Susan. I think you're muted.
I unmuted myself, and then it muted straight away. Oh. After you came, did Kathy ever see Jody again?
Oh, yes. Yes, that idea. They had this business together for almost 30 years, and they would get together after work every day at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, have a couple of drinks and smoke cigarettes. And so Jody had done that for 20 years. And so she respected that we wanted to have our private time together. But she said, I can't not be here for part of it. And she was with us.
That's good.
I had, was, as I said in here, you know, we really had a hard time because we were just so, both of us are emotional beings. But after Kathy died, we sat together and we realized how much we loved each other and that we could not keep doing for another minute, which made life so hard on my sister. So yes, we've developed a real wonderful sister relationship.
Thank you.
Yeah. Linza?
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Karen. Thank you. You know, I listen to your story. It brings up for me thoughts I've had about who do I want to be with me in the hospital? Who would I want to be with me if I knew that I was dying? I was in that last sort of fragile, vulnerable place. And the truth being told, it isn't always the person you might or people that you might think you should choose or would choose because of their position. And so I just really appreciate your story and Kathy's wisdom and her courage to say, come, yeah. You know, and you came and you knew how to be with her. And it's such a gift, and not everybody can offer that.
Yeah.
And that we are able in our last days to tell the truth about that kindly, but just really say, I know that you can be with us, and so please be with me. And you were a sister. You know, I don't have a sister that could be with me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a sister, but she's not who I would invite. So thank you so much for just laying out that sort of complicated story too. And how clear and big your yes was.
Yeah. Dory.
I it was nice to hear that Kathy looked serene. That was a nice touch.
Yes.
You hope that she felt good, and that was expressing that she felt good when she died.
It was time for her, and when she planned it out to the nth degree, I think in that, and I was told by hospice when they were there is that basically nobody outlives COVID. I mean, or a COPD. When you're at the place that you really diagnosed and it's very prevalent in your body, is that you will not survive it. So they said, what we tend to do as teachers then is to teach people how to be at peace with death.
Ooh.
And that's what I saw. I mean, she was, when I saw her with those, she had propped, you know, like her beautiful linen pillows up around her and was just kind of leaning back. And it was, Dorianne, that was so serene. Ooh. And just absolute peace.
Nice.
And she didn't disturb my sleep.
Amazing.
How she did that's a thing. How did you do all that stuff when I right next to you? She did.
But you were part of her peacefulness. She knew you were there.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah.
No. I was kidding about not
even. Well, but yeah.
But yeah, it was.
Barbara.
Karen, that was just a beautiful time that you had with your sister. So thank you for sharing. It brings to mind, you know, when I was called to Montana, when my mom was moved from the hospital to hospice, I couldn't get away until the day that she in fact moved to hospice, and it was like 13 days. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days before the end, somebody at the hospice came in, and it was just she and I, and I said, is there any way that I can get in and hold her? And the nurse was just absolutely delighted. And I did that, and we're not a touchy-feely family, but I thought that was something that it felt good to me, and I thought it would probably mean something to her. And I had done that again that night, and at that point we had moved into the room, so my brother was with me, and we were taking turns sleeping in the bed. And so I'm curled up, and I'm holding Mom, and it's about midnight, and my brother, it is a big room, just pacing and pacing and pacing, and I'm like so special. And finally, he comes to me and he says, this is inappropriate. And I looked at him, and, you know, he was obviously just really upset in terms of his closeness. And my thought was that, you know, when I slept, he would take over for me, and he would literally provide that kind of comfort, which was something that in his parameter he simply could not do. And so I got up and continued my vigil, and towards the end, and I'm not a visual person, but I visualized my holding her. Mm-hmm. And at the end, that was what I was doing. And I had a sense, and at the end, you know, she had not talked for several days, but I had a sense we were having some kind of conversation. I've never had that before. It was absolutely unique. And I was very, very sorry that my brother could not share in that quality, because I think it would have brought him comfort, but he simply couldn't. But I felt like sharing.
This is making me think about Elaine and remembering visiting her in the hospice and wondering if there was anybody that curled up with her, you know.
I think of her a lot, and I visited her completely by myself, and I just sat there and held her hand. And but I remember her so clearly saying, dying sucks. and she said it in such her usual funny way. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
And remember, she had a cat. She had cats that she talked about all the time. So I brought her this little white kitty and put it in the bed with her. But I know, I think someone, it might have been Marcia, had said she visited with some of you, I think, but they didn't even recognize her because she didn't have her wig on. So that was, I'm sure that was a surprise for people, you know, who had never, I mean, I had never seen her either, but I saw patients, you know, who didn't have their wigs on, or they had their head shaved for neurosurgery or whatever. So it wasn't quite as shocking to me, but she just was so dry. Her wit was, but it was just lovely. I was really glad I was there by myself. It's special when you're alone with someone. And I was with my dad too. He was in the hospital just for 3 days or so before he died. And it was kind of failure to thrive at that point. But, you know, and they were saying, don't give him this and don't give him that to eat. I said, I didn't say it to them. I just did whatever I wanted, because I would never say no to someone who's basically at the end of their lives, and they shouldn't have a donut when they had one every day for the last umpteen years, or coffee, he'll choke. Well, he didn't, you know. It's just, and as a nurse, I think you just, I don't know, you just feel free to do what they want, not what somebody thinks they should have or whatever. Yes, Barbara.
You know, when we went over to visit Sylvia, a couple of us, Erica and I and somebody else went. I'm not quite sure who else.
I went with you once.
Okay, yeah. Well, I only went for once.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, and people had come in and talked to her, but there were a whole lot of people out, not in her room. And I remember going in to say goodbye, because I had gone in with everybody. And you know, her eyes were closed, but I thought that she could hear me. And I simply, you know, said, right. Sylvia, there are a lot of people here who love you. And right. her eyelids sort of, and I think she understood that. And I was just glad I had said it.
Right. I think I was taught, I don't know, hearing's the last sense to go. So you always assume they can hear you. And you just keep talking, even if you don't get any response.
You know, in retrospect, I always remember somebody. So when Ginsburg died, he had all of these people all around him. And somebody out of that group had talked about that experience. And yeah, I mean, he had a sense that all of these people he cared about were there and with him. And later thought that all of these people that were there for Sylvia really should have been in her room.
Right. Oh, I think people are afraid. They don't know what to say, or they think they don't, and that it's a shame.
Which Sylvia? Who?
Sylvia Gilman?
Mm-hmm.
She was part of our group, Karen.
Yeah.
For a long time.
She's the one who
a painter, an artist. She did sketches.
She hung up all over the room. Her
oh,
drawings.
Yes, great. Okay, thank you.
And an activist, you know, anti-nuclear, yeah, et cetera, peace activist.
Actually, Judith Cohen, when she died, she had a cat. And
oh, yes.
He would, when I first visited her when she was ill, her cat was nowhere to be seen. But once she was confined to her bed, her cat was just constantly there with her. It just curled up to her. And it kept, you know, kept her
company.
Yeah, I thought, you know, when I die, I want a cat. But that's well.
Dory and then Linda.
Oh, I think Mary Ann and I were with a group of about four people who went to see Elaine. And by that time, she was unconscious. But I was able to sing something that Erica and I had remembered from, knew from church, because at that point, and it was sort of like a go now in peace or something, let the light of peace surround you everywhere you go. And I was able to sing to Elaine, and somebody said that she responded, and I never expected to sing to somebody who was dying, and that
did
made
respond.
Me feel good. Yes. I'm Linda? Mary Ann, were you with me then?
I drove. Mary Ann, you and I think went.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I was going to say is I, you know, that in some ways it's simpler for animals because they don't have minds like we have. We're thinking, do I know the right thing to do? Will I say the right thing? And right. I'm afraid. And so I just, even though it might not have felt like courage to you, Karen, I just really am appreciating just your less following your instincts and being sort of the cat on the bed and being, knowing that just your physical presence meant a lot. And we don't get to practice this a lot, but I think I'm just thinking we need to call it practice. Like, what do you do? What do you say? How do you just be? What does somebody need? And we just have to keep trusting ourselves because it's terrible to be alone. Or to not be with people that make you feel peaceful.
Yeah.
That's spooky.
Right. Barbara?
You know, in terms of people's attitudes towards not wanting to intrude, I think sometimes that just gets in the way of our being human. I've Some of my undergrad folks met in Charleston for a fun weekend a ways back. And I came and they said, why have you packed all this stuff? And I said, well, I'm going to Linda's afterwards. And two of the gals looked at me in absolute horror. And they said, but her husband has Alzheimer's. And I'm like, yes. Because that was really why I was going. I wanted to go down. I mean, I adore Linda and we always have fun together, but I really wanted to go down to give her some kind of support. And they would never have thought to have done that because they thought it would be intruding.
Why do you think your brother said that's not appropriate?
How much time do you have?
Okay.
I think he perceived that in his mind, there are absolute borders between men and women. Doesn't matter whether it's your mother or not. He could never, as a man, have held mother in that way. And I didn't know that, but I learned it. But I'm pretty sure that that was true.
So he wasn't saying your doing it was inappropriate. He was saying he couldn't do it.
My sense is that it was not, he was not. Now, having said that, you know, so this same group I talked about that I went to school with, you know, we did this unusual, these institutes, 2 weeks, twice a year for 3 years. And the second, when I came back for the second one, everybody was throwing their arms around one another. And I'm like, whoa, what are you doing? Because that was not what I was raised with. And I learned just how wonderful that could be. And when I would come home, I started to hug mother. And she was like, oh, wow, this is strange. But she sort of put up with it. So, you know, could it be that that she would not have liked this? But having said that, you know, once I came home, my aunt was in the hospital and it was serious. And I came in late and mom said, I'll make the bed downstairs. I said, look, why don't I just bunk with you? It's easier. And I could tell she was absolutely delighted. Now, it might have been, you know, it was that she didn't have to go down or, you know, worry about. But no, I think that was more than that.
Yeah.
And the fact that nobody in my family ever, you know, does anything particularly affectionate, I think it's a loss. I mean, I found through these gals I went to school with that there's just real comfort in being able to get over that and do it. But no, I got a sense that with my brother, I think it was coming from the fact that I was doing this and he felt he could. That's just a guess. And I have never talked to him about it afterwards. So.
Wow.
Thank you, Karen.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. I'm now outside because the people are working in my house now. They came. So this is a pleasant way to end it out on my balcony.
Mary Rose, I think Ivel has her hand up.
No, I did. I just called on her, but
yeah.
Anyway, Ivel, go ahead, and then Marsha.
Karen, thank you so much because what you've done for me today, it's really a vigil. Mm-hmm. And sitting vigil. I had two vigils I sat for alone, and until today. And listening to you, I still felt like I had experienced it alone. When my father-in-law suddenly was ill and had moved to Connecticut, he was rushed to the hospital, and he died by 3 a.m. that morning. And, of course, I rushed to the hospital, and I was so close to him. I talked to him almost every day when he lived in Florida. My husband was on the train and didn't get in until 7 the next morning. So he passed at 3 and I thought, it's so hard being alone, but today you made me feel like I really wasn't alone. I really shared in what you were doing. And with my mom, Barbara, she was not a huggy-feely person. She was a tiny Scottish get-it-done person. And so at her hospice stage, I knew she was really failing. She was only able to have ice cubes. so it was leap year day and leap year night, an extra day. And there was a big storm and all the electricity was out at home. And I thought, I am going to stay with her tonight. And I slept with her in my arms, which my mother was not the huggy type. Yeah. But we embraced. It was that extra night. So March 1st, she could speak a little, and she said, you're supposed to hang your art show at the coffee shop. And I was like, what? What? Because my mother would get it done, do it. She always organized. And I said, all right, I'll go hang my show. So I hung, you know, nice colorful paintings, in the coffee shop, and I came back and she passed away. But I thought, I can't believe she told me, get what you need to get done. But again, no one was there. Everyone was far away. I was alone twice. So hearing what you did,
I'm losing you. Yeah.
My phone, you're cutting out. Every Say that again.
During those two experiences. And the only.
I think we've lost her.
You're frozen, Ivo.
It says I'm unstable.
It's too bad.
All right.
Is it okay if we go to Marsha?
All right. Can you hear?
Try to go ahead, Marsha.
Okay, I'm trying. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much, Karen. That was a beautiful story. I think it warmed all our hearts. And what I think was so marvelous is that you had the wherewithal and the desire to just hop on a plane and go right down there. That must have been so satisfying for your yes. sister.
Yes.
And that for you just got right on it. Talk about getting things done.
Yeah.
And you got a plane ticket. You had the money for the plane ticket. Yeah. Well, of course, you're connected with the airlines anyway.
Yeah. Right.
You probably had connections. But, and I think that the reason she didn't wake you up to tell you that she was dying is she didn't really want you to interfere.
Right.
You know, she wanted to go her own way. In her own time. And she didn't, if you would be upset, she wouldn't want to see you upset.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, she definitely did it her way because she was a perfectionist, and I'm sure I would have gotten in the way of
yeah, so you might have tried to
remind me of that because it's very true. She,
you might have tried to do something and I didn't quite catch it. Did she pull the cannula out of her nose?
She had the cannula. It was out of her nose, and she had it. She took the whole thing and put it together, you know, like we would you do when you take the cord out of something.
Yeah.
And it was just in her hand. She was just holding it in her hand, and it probably didn't go down further than about a foot and a half or so as it went back and forth. That amazed me. That was just really the thing. I went, wow. But then I think back on Kathy, and sure, she would have done that.
Yeah. Well, she dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's and did it her way.
Yeah.
Which I think is very beautiful. Yeah. I would be so proud of her.
I was. Doing it her I way. Was. Yes, she's a, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, Barbara.
Barbara, and then we have to stop because it's getting late.
Yeah.
Karen, I have a question. So when you came down, what happened to the presence of your other sister? Was she still there?
She was still there. They have contiguous property and those things. So they spent every afternoon together kind of rehashing the day's work, that kinds of things. So that was a given in their factor. But she gave Kathy and I about 3 days, 4 days of just staying away. And then she just said, you know what? I'm not going to pay attention to what you guys are saying. I'm coming. So it was a perfect way our family operates. And so, yeah, and then we were all of us were together. Then.
And your brother, fireworks. Was your brother there?
No, my brother wasn't there. He couldn't, he wouldn't have been able kind of like you're saying, Barb, he couldn't have helped handled it himself. I remember when my mother died, he had a very, very hard time. He was with her a lot before, but actual death was impossible. Yeah.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you.
Okay, let's break till 12:35, please. And okay. then.